degree in Ghana, Deputy Director Intellectual Property, and Professor Esme Duplessis, who is most recently here now, in her capacity as a member of the Standing Advisory Committee on Intellectual Property. So, having observed now all the protocols that we are required to observe in every direction, and I understand the DDG knows that. Am I correct? So we don't have some questioning faces around the table. You are all indeed very welcome, and the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, legislation, property bill, is a very, very important one. One of the more important ones that have crossed our desk in Parliament. And it is not something to be taken lightly, and it has far-reaching implications, as we've all begun to learn. And those implications are not only for the intended target group, but it is also that many, many of our committees here, not only within our own cluster of the ETC, but the social cluster as well, are directly involved in the implications of this piece of proposed legislation. Having said that, as you can see here, at this stage, we've had a number of public hearings, workshops, the study visit, and we have asked the department at this stage, who have in fact been attending our meetings, including workshops even, to respond to what they have heard. They don't have our report, as is correct, because our report is only finalized once we have also heard from themselves. So it's over to you, Ms. Ntuli, and your team. And, of course, you can direct them as you see fit. Thank you very much. And thank you very much. We just noticed yourself, and that was... But I'm just not wondering if you are here in your capacity as arts and culture, comrade. I also know we have people who occupy other positions in Parliament as well. Right, over to the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. And we are happy to be here again, as usual. And we're hoping that today will provide you with the responses that will assist you in taking this process forward, obviously, from here. And we also appreciate the invitations by the committee for us to attend some of the workshops and all of that. I must say, Chair, you know, on behalf of the department and the team here, that we have also learned a lot through those workshops. And we really appreciate that process because we cannot stop learning, and we get different views from stakeholders on a daily basis. And I think the difficult task for us as government when we propose either legislation, policies, or strategies to cabinet or parliament is that we always have to find a balance between the interests, you know, of all the stakeholders and make sure that we, at the end of the day, our eye is on the ball which is the objectives, the ultimate outcomes, the ultimate benefits. And, yes, sometimes you don't get that first time around. And as you engage with stakeholders, the process gets enriched. And by the time we get here, there's also an opportunity again to enrich the process. So without also scaring the committee, but I must say that this is not the only complex piece of legislation that will come from the department. The nature of our work is such that it's so cross-cutting that a lot of matters will be complex by nature. But I think the most important thing is the process that we take in trying to come up with proposals that seek to strike the right balance. And like I said, we don't always find that right balance, and we always rely on the guidance of this committee of parliament in finalizing these proposals that we have on the table. I've got a team here that has already been introduced, and we will share the presentation between myself and Mr. Nishtenze. But I've got a team here that is with us, which will assist in facilitating some of the questions and maybe adding in some of the areas that we may have fallen short in the presentation. And the other thing that we must mention is that we didn't seek to respond to each and every aspect that was raised during the public hearing. But we uplifted the key things and the areas where a number of comments were focused on, and to also attempt to present to you some proposals in terms of how we think some of the shortcomings could be addressed, and also just to also guide in terms of some of the jurisdictions that we've looked at where it works, and also where something doesn't work. I think we'll be very happy to say that to yourself, that we don't really think this can work very well, and I think we'll be very confident in saying that, because I think we obviously rely on your guidance ultimately. Chair, I think the purpose of today's meeting is very clear, so I won't go through that, but I think as a matter of process for the presentation today, I will do the general overview. And in the general overview, Chair, if you can forgive us, because we'll try and recap of some of the things that we've done in the initial presentation, just so that we lay the foundation again and the basis for why we had been here as a department proposing this piece of legislation. You'll recall, members, that when we came here, we did draw members' attention to the process that unfolded leading up to where we are at today. And I think key to that is the policy on Indigenous knowledge system that was adopted by Cabinet in 2004. And as a consequence of that policy, there was then the amendments that were effected to the Patents Act. So the amendments were effected in 2006, and they were intended to also align the protection of IK as advanced in the Biodiversity Act. So that was a consequence of the IK policy. The IK policy, in essence, had indicated in terms of how IK should be dealt with in the country and what is the approach that as South Africa we are adopting in trying to address that area and protecting sufficiency. In 2007, we then piloted a policy document, including the draft bill that flew from that policy document through Cabinet, and it was approved for public consultation. That was in 2007. And in that approval by Cabinet, specific mention was made to say that the department must go back and still further consult with the departments, like, for instance, specifically the Arts and Culture Department, Science and Technology, Cooperative Governance, and so forth. So it was specific, and we went back. In the process of broader stakeholder consultation, we went back to consult in detail with the government department so that we can also agree on the direction that has been taken flowing from the policy that has been adopted in 2004. Then we went back to Cabinet in 2009, and the bill was approved for introduction into Parliament. But we then had to resubmit it early in the year for introduction into Parliament. I think there was a some guidance that we got at the department that any piece of legislation that is being proposed, which was approved by the Cabinet in the previous administration but has not yet been introduced, then we can then just take it back to Cabinet for Cabinet new members to familiarize themselves with it before it comes back here. So we went back to Cabinet on that basis, and it was approved for introduction early this year. And this is why we're here then. I think basically the bill that is in front of you seeks to introduce amendments to the existing intellectual property laws that we have in the country to protect IKS. IK or TK, because others say traditional knowledge, but I think as we engage with stakeholders, we sort of then decided to use one particular terminology for consistency on all of that. So it's one of the stakeholder enrichment processes where they said sometimes it's confusing, we must just stick to one terminology. And I think we're happy to use IK for now, but then it would mean, you know, traditional knowledge as well. We can use that interchangeably. So we then, therefore, in this case, like we said, we were basically looking at this in a manner that is consistent with the policy, but also as a follow-up to the very same decision that was taken, that the intellectual property laws must be amended to sufficiently cater for the protection of IK. And in that sense, there was also recognition that in any event, the exploitation of IK already exists and occurs within the IP system. So in order to close that loop and ensure that the exploitation occurs in the manner that is appropriate, that recognizes the origin of the work, and that, you know, where there's need for compensation, such compensation is facilitated, that therefore you need to then effect some changes to the IP law to deal with that. In doing this, we have been very, I think, open also to the committee, and I think that can be seen in the policy document that was approved by Cabinet that goes with this bill. In page 10 to 19 of that, we have looked at the various IP elements and assessed the weaknesses and the strong points in relation to the protection of IK. And we've given you basically the strengths and weaknesses in that regard. And again, Chair, as we sit here, we still believe that this is the best situation to protect IK. This is the best system if you're looking at commercialization and you want to prevent biopiracy and misappropriation. This is the best avenue that you can use to protect IK. We've looked at all of the other avenues, and we're not saying that they cannot coexist. They can coexist, but we're saying that for the purpose of commercialization, for the purpose of misappropriation, for purpose of preventing all of those ills that have already existed, this is the best way that you can actually use to achieve that. We've also presented the committee with a list of countries that we've looked at, and also we've made reference to the various conventions that are necessary and applicable in this space. And we've also looked at the approaches, you know, in terms of the IKS policy, that clearly there was intention to have a hybrid type system as opposed to a single system that can be used to protect IK. I think the acknowledgement that you actually need some hybrid system, which might be a combination of various systems to protect, it was inherent in the IK policy. And so we think that we have not deviated in the proposals that we've got to Parliament. But again, we also want to also be objective to say, are the proposals that we've brought here workable? Are they doable? And if they're not doable, what is it that we suggest can be done to make them doable? And again, like I say, I think as a country, we decided to do was to look at a package of solutions as opposed to one area, and to say these solutions are not mutually exclusive. They can coexist, and then they can complement each other. And actually, there's evidence that in most instances, you can have one, but you need the other one sooner or later. And I think we can give you examples of that. In countries that have initially adopted a position that they'll just use sui generis type of legislation to deal with this, you'll see that, in fact, they've moved on to actually now tamper with the intellectual property, because the protection under the sui generis would not necessarily cater for all of the avenues that you need to protect, especially the ones that relate to the commercialization in terms of IP. In the WIPO area, which is obviously our guide as well, a decision was taken, having done an analysis around the various options that exist, that in fact countries could adopt a sui generis, they could adopt an IP system, or they can adopt a combination of those. But you can even add to those and put in other items. You can put the competition policy and use it to protect your IP. You can use consumer protection to protect IP. You can also further even use your criminal law system to to protect your IP. It depends really on the circumstances of each and every country and what it is that you're seeking to deal with. Because one of the things that drive us when we look at policy issues in the department, which I think is a principle that all policymakers would follow in any event, is that we want to propose solutions that deal with the problem that has been identified. We don't develop a legislation and then we say, what is it that we're going to shoot with this legislation? We identify the problem first and then we say, what is the best way of dealing with it? And then we'll look at all the other options and then we'll say, what are the pros and cons for each and every one of these options? And then we'll ultimately come up with something that, on an objective basis, it looks like a proposal that will deal with the problem. And that then gets enriched by the consultation with the stakeholders who might refine it there and there or may suggest, you know, a combination of the alternatives that we had on the table, and then we can then look at the practicalities. But by the time we come here, we sort of have done that assessment, and we would like to put that on the table to say we've been very open about it, and we hope that the committee would take that into account. It's there in the policy document. We've given all of the information that needs to be given in that space. But I think the other thing that is interesting that we have already mentioned is that the committee itself, I think it has done a lot of work on its own. And I think, Chair, I must again repeat that we have benefited so much on this process. And there are a number of issues that we cannot list now that we've actually, you know, learned and tried to also align, you know, in our thinking to say, you know, how can this work? You know, if the issue is the issue of database and it comes up so often, what is it that's an issue with it? You know, and then we try and see what could be an issue, so we can also be very objective about it. But I think the process that this committee has taken in this bill has been very fruitful for all of us. So these are just some of the things that we can say that they are not in dispute. I think even all the other stakeholders that have appeared before this committee, they've expressed that they do not think that there is any dispute about the need to protect the IK. I think the issue has been how, you know, how do we do that? And we seem to differ in terms of the how part. And I think maybe after the presentation, when we've given you our responses, you perhaps would then have a sense of why we chose this again. I know that we have presented this before, but now in response to some of the issues that have come up, we're thinking that perhaps we can give you a much better sense of that. But I think the key issue around the need to protect IK, without going through all of this, I think often when we speak about indigenous knowledge, traditional knowledge, I think people think about knowledge that is there that should be protected and preserved, but not something that can be used and translated into an economic activity. So, you know, we always think it's knowledge that is there in the community or it's knowledge that sits there, that comes out of traditional practices, and it's okay if we just exchange it within communities and all of that. But I think the area around the potential for communities to actually exploit it properly within the right framework and derive some income from it, derive benefit from it, and generate some economic activity within the community, I think sometimes we sort of put that to the back seat because people tend to think traditional knowledge should be something that sits there and then it must just be protected so that somebody doesn't abuse it. But I think that's not the only point. Preservation and all of that, it's things that we're already doing in the country. We preserve things for heritage purposes. We preserve things for cultural identity purposes. That we already have legislation that does that in the country. But at this point, we're saying that how do we turn the creative ideas into business ideas? How can communities benefit from that? I think that's where we act. And I think that's really where we find a good interface between ourselves and the Department of Science and Technology on the innovation side to say, how do you then stimulate that? You know, the talks around the innovation funds that are generated and injected into communities to actually stimulate that kind of activity. I think it's the direction that we'd like to see ourselves going through. But also in terms of the interface with the arts and culture, it's exactly that area of preservation and the area of protecting certain cultural expressions to ensure that the cultural identities of communities do not diminish or are not bastardized by people, and so that they lose the value and the morality that is attached to them. These are the areas which the bill that is in front of you sought to interfere with. That relates to the Performance Protection Act, the Copyright Act, the Trademark Act, and the Design Act. Like we've mentioned before, we've already dealt with the Patent Act in 2006. So that part is done. So the next to follow were this one. And this is the phase that we're at today. There are just a few issues that we thought we should just highlight based on the presentations that were made to this committee by a number of organizations. And we must say that these arguments that were made, they were not made for the first time in this committee. They've been made in other forums before. They've been made to the stakeholder engagement meeting that we've had before. And we have also thought very carefully about them as a department and to say, are we really doing something that is undoable? And having assessed all of that, we felt that this is not something that is undoable. And there's also proper guidance in the literature, there's proper guidance in practices in other jurisdictions that are saying that this is so doable. And also in the existing pieces of legislation that are here in South Africa, the IP laws, this is also doable within the very same framework. So on that basis, we believe that to provide a solution that is directed to the problem is exactly this. Anything else within the context of commercialization, we're just wasting our time. I think it will do other things. It will achieve other objectives. But for the purpose of commercialization and protecting IK from exploitation through IP system, if we do anything else, we would really, really not be addressing the problem that has been identified. So these are the areas that have been made to this committee as arguments to say why what is being proposed right now in the bill is not doable. One of the, obviously, the main arguments that has come up was that, you know, indigenous knowledge or traditional knowledge does not meet the requirement of novelty and originality that is often required in this space of practice. But then we've looked at that, and we can give you some examples where this is actually, this argument does not hold water, even within the current IP system that we have. And then the second one was that the protection that you can give in terms of the IP system is of limited duration, and it might not work for some of the rights that need to be protected indefinitely, like some of the cultural rights that they should be protected indefinitely and stuff like that. The third one is really to say that because you're dealing with communities and all of that, it's so difficult to identify who the individual owner of that knowledge is. We've heard that again, and we're saying that again. This is not the first time we're hearing that. But again, we can give examples of even in the current IP system, talk about copyright, talk about trademarks. It is possible that you can actually look for the owner and you cannot find. So the obligation is on the person that wants to use that information to do a diligent search. And to say, I have tried, I did not find the author of this piece of paper that I want to use in my book. But the one thing that is honorable to do is for that person to say, author unknown. If you've used a piece of that, you will put it in your footnote and say, author unknown. You're just basically saying, this is not my idea. I took it from somewhere, but I don't know to whom it's belonging. So that is the honorable thing to do, even under the current system, after you've done a diligent search. That's the main thing. So we do not think that there is anything that is different that we are proposing here in terms of the process. I think there may be other things that might just have to be done slightly differently, but there is absolutely nothing that is new about what is being proposed. And the last one, which has also been put to this committee, was that the bill that is in front of us does not say much about where people would like, don't want to disclose sort of trade secrets or the knowledge, because they don't want it to be known. But at the same time, they would like to benefit from the protection. And we're responding to that. It's something that has been mentioned to this committee as one of the arguments against this bill. We've also gone through again to the WIPO documents, which have looked at the analysis of the above issues that were raised already in around 2000-2002 when the research was being done and this issue was being discussed. And I think one of the conclusions in the analysis which was made was that all of these things that are made are put here as limitations to using IT system to protect IK. It's things that are perceived, but if you go deeper and you look at what is happening in real life and in practice, you find that those things actually do not prevent that from happening at all. So we'll also highlight that just to give you a sense of that, but obviously we've just indicated the reference for the document so that we can always look at it later. And there's also further developments after that. I think the committee will recall that when Professor Conradi Fetzer came here, he provided us with a list of even further development in terms of even beyond the WIPO study, further development in the IP area where amendments were introduced to copyright, to industrial designs, specifically to deal with IK. So even further to that, the approach has been, even for countries that already have some sui generis system, they feel that there is a need to still complement it with some provisions in the IP system so that you can ensure the sufficiency of the protection that you can give. And I've said that in terms of some of the countries, I've indicated some of the countries there that have subsequent to 2002, after the WIPO study, that have actually gone ahead to move in the direction that we are seeking to move right now. And just as a matter of conclusion, I think on my part, I've indicated this before to the committee that When we speak about traditional knowledge, people tend to think traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge must be something that is old. We don't think that is true, and I think the WIPO research studies and the discussions are confirming exactly that. If we refer to traditional knowledge, the traditional part of it, if you look at it, it's really about how that knowledge is being produced. It has got nothing to do about when is it being produced, on what date is it being produced. It's got nothing to do with that. Is the manner in which it's produced, is a traditional way, of how you produce it. That's basically how it is. It doesn't define the time. It doesn't define the date on which it is produced. And I think further, if we look into that, then we realize that the very same thing around the time, or the date on which knowledge is produced, even plays little relevance in the assessment of the issue of novelty. Is this new, or is it something that is unknown to the public? I think the main thing is whether something is actually already in the public space. That's what defines it, whether it's new or not. And that you can see by practical examples, where somebody takes something that has already been done in the communities, and then they then go and register it in another country as something that is new. But because it's not known in that country, it's new, of course. So the issue of novelty is really also driven by, the issues of disclosure to the public. Has it been disclosed to the public? Does the public know about it? So those are some of the issues that we need to look at, I think, when we look at the issue of novelty and also the confusion that sometimes exists between, when people look at traditional and they think it must be something old. And we've indicated to the committee before, again, to say, traditional knowledge has not stopped 100 years ago. It develops every day because as we use traditional practices to respond to the environmental changes, to whatever changes in communities, it develops every day. So I think that is confirmed also by the WIPO itself. In its research and analysis, that's what it finds. That's what it is. It's not something that is static. It's not something that is sitting somewhere and it's locked there, and then we only go and take it. It's something that moves and goes, from generation to generation, and it's on a daily basis where people respond to their own circumstances and respond to climate change, to a number of other issues. The other aspect that is also in response to the issues that have been raised is the issue of, again, identification of ownership. Again, we are saying that if identification of ownership is a problem, taxis have been, we've seen taxis in other countries where databases have been used effectively to immediately identify something that is already registered in a database. However, again, the ownership in terms of something being owned by a community or a number of people instead of one person whom you can identify and say this is the person, there's also, within the very same IP system that we have collective marks, we've got trademarks which can be owned by a number of people. You know, an example that is given, for instance, is the shareholders of General Motors who hold the rights to the trademark of GM, but on behalf of a number, they hold it on behalf of a number of people who are their shareholders. But, you know, so that is not, it's not something new. It's something that already happens within the very same system that we're using. So the issue that this is not possible because it's, you know, you're dealing with a community, many people, therefore you would not be in a position to identify the owners and all of that. We don't think that really stands. In a sense, there is no basis for it because in practice, we already can do that. But I think one thing that also supports that is that in the very traditional structures and the traditional leadership in those communities concede that it is doable, it's possible. For instance, the tribal authorities, they are the custodians of the information of the communities that they fall within their jurisdiction. They've got, you can go to them, you can get information about when a child was born, who, how many children in that family. That information is in the tribal authorities. They have it. So they are saying themselves that it is not something that is not doable. So, and some of the things are obvious things. Yes, there may be those borderline cases, but then I think when we look at intervening, we should also distinguish between borderline cases that would might be in a, you know, very small percentage where you then need to then make a decision, you know, having assessed a number of issues, a decision that can even go either way, 50-50, you know. But I think we should not cloud things on the basis of borderline cases. And I think that is what we assessed with the presentations that were made and making these arguments, that I think we're looking at issues that may be small percentage borderline type cases, and then we want that to cloud what actually is doable. We think, yes, there may be challenges with some minimal borderline cases, but we think this is doable. And we accept the fact that, yes, for the first time, people might find it difficult. I think any law is very difficult. Parliament passes laws all the time, and sometimes they're very difficult for people to implement, you know, but you get to do it. You get to go back to the intention of Parliament to say, but what did Parliament want us to achieve here? You know, and then we try to then put in place the policies, the strategies that will help us achieve what Parliament intended. Sometimes we don't get it right. Sometimes we get it, you know, 100% right as the implementers on the ground. But I think everything that is required to implement this legislation can be done and it can be achieved. The last part that I think from my side is really the issue about the term of protection. The fact that some IK might require protection, you know, for an indefinite period, you know, because it's perpetual in nature. Again, we said it, we don't think that is not doable. Already, under the Trademark Act, when you register a trademark, you can renew it every 10 years, forever. There is no limit. So if it's about to expire on the ninth year, you can do your renewal, you renew again, so it's forever. So now these issues about limitations and saying that we're limiting IK is perpetual in nature, it cannot be protected using the IP system, I think it's a bit artificial because in practice you can already do it. Geographical indications, you can do that. It's perpetual in nature. So we're saying that this is possible, but also we can then draw some distinctions in the process. I'm going to stop here and just hand over to McDonald to just say some of the areas that I've covered, they might be here, so I'll rely on him to skip some of those because we've, you know, tried to just sum them up in the front, but I think for your purposes in the presentation, they will be there, but we'll pick on some of the issues that we have not picked up in the first presentation. Thank you.
Just on that point,
some of us may have seen our membership morgue leave. That is purely on a temporary basis to attend the Chief Whip's meeting, and they will be returning to us. But I should just hasten to add that the Honourable September will also be leaving because she is part of the committee, the organising committee for the memorial service of the late Alina, who we all are aware of, and Suli was a member of this parliament and also the caucus chairperson of in the House, not in the House, but in the ANC. So you will be leaving, I know, and thank you for letting me know. And we would also like to complete our business, given the memorial service and so on. We would like to complete it at 12:30. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Just by way of introduction, I know that during the public hearings, presenters were coming with their CVs that they are experts in this area. I don't want to bore you. I don't know what weight you will attach on that in reaching your decision, but I may add that probably all those experts, they used to, in particular the lawyers, they used to appear before me as the registrar of intellectual property. I passed a lot of judgments which they were alleging that this is unconstitutional. Some of them tried to go to court, because the registrar of trademark is a judge of first instance. If you lose the case there, you go to court. Yeah, it's not a review. So they never succeeded. So one may claim that, therefore, things which we're talking about, they may be experts. I think when they say things are unconstitutional, it's an opinion. Only the court can decide whether this is constitutional or unconstitutional. So I will stop there on my CV. Now, thanks, Chair. I'm on page 14. Yes. Which says it was submitted that the bill is unconstitutional. And we maintain that that is an opinion. We may be wrong too, it's an opinion. Okay. We are saying this bill does not contravene any section of the Constitution. Part of the sanction of certification process by the state law advisors is to exactly assess whether a particular bill is constitutional or not. So it has been certified, and it is before this House. And preliminarily, one may say it is not unconstitutional. Therefore, the issue of taking of the bill, now that it has been raised, in particular that you need to consult with provinces and local communities, the instance of this bill is to amend existing IP systems. That is the essence. And the amendments want to complement. They want to complement issues of maybe customary law and the like, but the primary purpose is to complement, to amend the IP legislation. The bill is set correctly under Section 75. That is our submission. The Constitution, somewhere it was said that the Constitution recognized customary law and dictates that issues pertaining to customary law must be protected. That we agree. This bill, therefore, indirectly seeks to protect issues under the regime and therefore is in line with the values of the Constitution. Some people were saying maybe we want to expropriate property because our Constitution talks about the property, whether it's landed property, physical property, whether it's so-called intellectual property, it's property. So may I assure this House that this bill is not coming to expropriate any property. It is not. We know that there is a procedure to expropriate a property. The Constitution itself talks about the issue of saying this expropriation has to take place, a national law should talk to that, and then compensation should follow. So that's not where we are here. We are saying we want to complement even the Constitution itself, which recognizes cultural dimension or property. And maybe we can stop there to say we are not coming to with a bill that wants to expropriate. Again, it was said that it is contrary to international obligations that South Africa has to honor. Here, by way of example, is that one, in the area of intellectual property, South Africa is a member of the Berne Convention, the Paris Convention, and the TRIPS Agreement. We are emphasizing that the TRIPS Agreement, again, when the WTO came into being, say in 1995, the WTO itself, the Council, adopted the Paris Convention and amended it. Paris Convention is in 1884, if I'm not mistaken. But the WTO itself took only the Paris Convention, say, up and from 1967 onward, forgetting about the 18-something. So therefore, when we talk about the TRIPS Agreement, we're talking about the conglomeration of many treaties. The Paris Convention is a part of it. The Berne Convention, from a certain date, and the integrated circuit. So that is the TRIPS Agreement we're talking about. And then we are saying, therefore, as a member of this organization, there is no intention from our side to move away. So we are here pliable to be advised to say, here, you are not complying. Can you improve in this way? That is not the intention. So we are not here to come and mislead Parliament. Please advise us, we are here to advise you to reach a proper conclusion. So, there is this issue of equal treatment, Berne Convention, yes, accepted that the issue of equal treatment under the Berne Convention, it was overlooked probably. There are debates outside there, may we concede. And then the issue of Rome Convention, it talks about reciprocity in the areas of performances. So let's see how we craft it. When this bill was adopted by Cabinet, it was a conditional approval by Cabinet. If I may remind the House, it was conditional. One, it was to say, we are approving this bill provided the issue of reciprocity is addressed. So let's see how we do it, but we don't want to mislead. And then another issue is on the definition of traditional knowledge, usage of traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge, to say align it with the IKS policy of 2004, use indigenous knowledge, IK. This we took, and then it was certified accordingly. So the issue of requires improvement to cater for national treatment, reciprocity, non-misleading of consumers under the geographical indications, trademarks, regime in accordance with trade. That's where we want to go. Issue four. It was said copyright protection of indigenous knowledge is not workable. And then in our response we said, okay, we'll talk about ownership, talk about authorship and the lifespan as well as the content. We like folklore because this is a national heritage. But if we want to protect folklore, maybe that is not the jurisdiction of the DCR. But folklore or original works on IK where ownership is unknown can belong to the state as per the provisions in the WIPO stroke UNESCO model of 1982. And then there is a Tunis model which may guide South Africa, and then there is this French acronym. These are former colonies of France in Africa. They have a sort of SADC equivalent on IP matters, and then they have a good model where if somebody wants to rearrange one stanza or one stanza or verse, you need to get a permission. And then you can claim intellectual property on the way how you rearrange. When you die after 50 years, whatever you borrowed goes back to the issue of being owned by the state, because folklore is owned by the state, as an example. So therefore, the lifespan in that area can be perpetual. If it is owned by an individual, derivative work, if it is owned jointly with the community, we are saying it is possible that it may also be indefinite because the community probably is not a once-off entity. If the community is the owner, then the protection can be perpetual. I've already said that. Derivative work from pure folklore or original work can be owned by individuals or jointly with the community itself. Content is a problem. Therefore, consent to use community IP can be through community structures, such as the tribal authorities. I think the DDG has already indicated the tribal authority can play a role in identification of who owns what in the community. And then bullet number two, trademark protection can be perpetual as it is renewable, already said. In this area, let me hasten to say that there are cultural copyrights. Let's give an example. Let's say in the Ndebele community, they want to come with a cultural design or cultural trademark, which whenever you look at it, you see anything that originates from this cultural group of the Ndebele. So they can have a cultural trademark, like the Maori people. They have a cultural Maori. You look at it, you go to Eastern Europe, you see that the Slavs are also having those things. So whatever comes underneath it will be their intellectual property, but that symbol can be registered as something that indicates the commercial activities, say, of the Ndebele, as an example. And then in passing, we don't agree with one of the submissions that the Ndebele are Zulus. It was said by Talro, I think. Ndebele are on their own. And they may be coming from the Nguni stock. So that one is no longer debatable. It's confirmed in many forums. So therefore the issue of geographical indicators, whether it is in the wine, our trustee here indicated that there are estates, there are districts and the like. Maybe he forgot to tell the house that most of those districts or estates, they are registered also under certification mark, under trademark law. So therefore, we see sort of a complementarity in the, what is it, liquor product, whatever that legislation was talking about, and the trademark act. That's where maybe we play the role, because somebody will come and want to register a trademark that has got a version of that district which he was describing. And then there was no talking of this legislation. For your information, I stopped that to say, no, we are running one government. Let's see that our acts are applied in accordance, even if they are not talking, they are not, amended accordingly. But you just issue a notice as a registrar to say whenever somebody comes with a name akin to the estates in the wine area, please look at that database. Don't take something there and register it there yet, because it will frustrate. It will frustrate commercial activities in that area. So note all copyright, not all copyright related to traditional wares need to be in material form. It was said that you need to reduce everything in writing. So we are saying our Copyright Act may be saying that. Maybe here we may be proposing that there should be an amendment under the TRIPS agreement itself, and under the UNESCO and the WIPO model, which is intellectual property and civil law. Not everything needs to be in writing under copyright law. So it's how we need to temper with the legislation, not everything. So then we can see which ones are not to be in writing. So that argument does not hold water. The issue of protection of intangible IP is one of the areas of agreement in the NEDLAC process, which Parliament can consider. That is already considered. The executive director of NEDLAC came and did a presentation here. The report is before the Honorable House, and then that is something that can be talked about. So concerns are perceived as opposed to being real. That is our submission. Issues raised, the submission that collective ownership of IP is not possible. We have already talked about this issue. In the area of trademarks, design, collective ownership is possible by making use of companies, trusts, cooperatives, and closed cooperatives, which may have many shareholders or members. Currently, collective or certification marks are owned by a collective. We gave an example of Woolmark, which South Africa used to own, together with New Zealand and Australia, but it's no longer the case. So in the area of copyright, the Parma, Ham, Colorado, Apple, the U.S. is using the same system to protect some of its products. In the area of performance protection, a group of performers will own the performance rights, a collective using the name of group, e.g. African Footprint. We can give an example. Some definitions in the bill are problematic. That was what was said. Definitions of indigenous community, through traditional performance, or author, traditional work, traditional IP, beneficiaries, are a few to mention a few. The DTI concedes that definitions are a complex matter, and that the bill needs improvement. Based on suggestions from stakeholders, the bill can be improved to address any apparent deficiencies, taking into account that no one-size-fits-all approach to redefine. I think the linguistic, cultural, they came here with their own definition. Legal Resource Center, they came with the restitution of land, their own definition. So there are many definitions, but we are saying we must not have a definition that is permanently cast on the stone, and it cannot grow because of interpretation by the court. That's what we are saying. Another issue, it is not appropriate for IK to invest in the national fund which has no jurisdiction personality. Response, it was envisaged that there will be a national trust which has legal personality to be the custodian of all IP whose authors are not identifiable. The community may form any business enterprise such as a cooperative trust or company which will represent its interest as a legal persona. And that issue of Coca-Cola, the example by the DDG of Coca-Cola exercising the wet Coke or Coca-Cola or any other product on behalf of its shareholders. Rights can therefore be owned by communities directly or only unidentified owners rights could vest in the state. I think that argument was well put by the DDG. Issues raised. Use of the current IP system versus a sui generis system for IK. Response is to say sui generis to some may mean amending the IP legislation. If that is what they mean, our understanding is that that is not sui generis. Let me repeat it again. Sui generis to some may mean tempering or amending the IP system. In our understanding, that is not sui generis. It's IP system. Others may want a separate piece of legislation altogether, e.g. taking geographical indicators as standalone, namely India, whereas some may include integrated geographic indications into the IP system. For instance, in the Trademarks Act of South Africa, as it exists now, there are collective marks, there are certification marks. We gave example of the government of Egypt trademarking a certification mark under the cotton issue and then using the IP system. So we are saying in the bill, I think we're just improving the definition of a geographical indication, but under the current system. Mostly databases or registers are regarded as sui generis. There are public and private databases. Preferably, both should interface with the IP system. Or if they don't interface, there is a problem. Because somebody may still go to the database and steal something and come back to the IP system and say, this is my new thing. A good example is the rooibos. Rooibos tea, that's an example. Rooibos tea in South Africa is generic. It's not a trademark. Somebody, a South African, went to the U.S. and registered it there. It is not in the database of the U.S. They set their own database of intellectual property and everywhere. They never found rooibos. So they say, here is the trademark. So it is new there. So, by analogy, one may say, therefore, if a database containing something, whether of cultural value or whatever, is not in talking to the intellectual property system, there is a danger that somebody may straddle the line and then will be disadvantaged. That is the point which we want to see. IT system, database will not allow persons to take the knowledge from the public and claim IP without prior informed consent. A good example is that one of the Maori in New Zealand. In the Patents Act and the Trademarks Act, they expressly say nothing of Maori origin should form part and parcel of the IP system. If there is no consent or negotiation with the community concerned. So therefore the tribal authority of Maori is recognized in law. So we can tamper with that. Yes. Another issue is that the submission, the bill does not cater for those who do not wish to disclose their knowledge but seek protection. Our response is to say the trade secret route, which we described in the Coke, to say Coke never patented what we're drinking. They never patented. They are using trade secret. So, if you work in Coke, as a managing director or whatever, you sign confidentiality clauses to say you want to see it. And then they can interdict you if you reveal something when you are no longer an employee. So that is the common law protection. So here we are saying, people, those who don't want to disclose, like our traditional dealers, they protect their intellectual property using the common law trade secret rules. So this deal is not going to force any person to come and reveal. We are not saying so. It is agreed that the alternative dispute resolution mechanism should be factored into the bill without tampering with the inherent jurisdiction of the court. In other words, we are saying when there are disputes about maybe between two communities or three, going to court is very expensive. So therefore, this bill should cater for alternative dispute resolution. Because we are dealing with the indigent people. Even in the NEDLAC report, I think that is what is contained. So, but we are not saying, and that the agreement of the dispute resolution can be turned into a court order to be made binding. So, but we are not saying, therefore, we should force people to go to that alternative dispute resolution. No. But there is already alternative dispute resolution, arbitration. Arbitration currently, it is in our hands. But that one already is already hijacked by the legal system, like the legal experts or whatever. In so much that it is also very expensive. It cannot cater for these indigent people who want to. So this is the alternative dispute resolution, different from the arbitration act. In addition, the Trademark Copyright and Patent Tribunal, the National Council, will have a dispute resolution role that is not mandatory. Further, existing community traditional structures under traditional leadership can be accredited. In other words, they can be recognized by this act. There was this issue of saying, yes, the department never factored in the NEDLAC process. That is considered. Response, the NEDLAC report forms part of the consultative process here, and it has been presented to the portfolio with clear areas of agreement and disagreement. There are only three areas of disagreement, if I'm not mistaken. So the majority we are saying, we are still expecting that it can be an improvement. Yeah, the rest is just a repetition there. The submission that the bill proposed what is contrary to WIPO. It is not true. In this area, WIPO has collated information regarding the protection of IP based on the work already done since 2000 to date in the work of Intergovernmental Committee, IGC, on the protection of traditional knowledge, genetic resources and folklore, as well as culture. Traditional cultural expression. Provisions for the protection of IK is dealt with in Article 1 as an example regarding protection against misappropriation of IK, and then there are laws are listed in the article that can deal with the protection of IK in national legislation and IP, criminal law, fisheries and environmental laws, and special law on IK has been listed as a possible legal measures or any other law or a combination of these laws. So therefore, the salient point here is to say, under the WIPO, draft treaties and the like, as the DDG has said, you can choose the IT system, standalone, criminal law, standalone, competition law, standalone, or a combination of those laws. So I think that's where we are coming from. If the sui generis will be dealt with at another forum, yes, it's okay. But our policy adopted in 2004 on IP policy recommends protection of IP under both IP and specific legislation, as was done with the Patents Act and the Biodiversity Act. The submission that proposes the bill does not address cross-border community issues, as IP might be may go beyond the boundaries of South Africa. The response is that, yes, it is true that this parliament does not have power to legislate beyond the borders of South Africa. IP is territorial in nature, globally, and parliament is limited in its power and cannot legislate extraterritorially. Certain jurisdictions have begun talks at a bilateral or regional level to deal with issues that go beyond their respective national borders. A good example here, another issue is that South Africa may influence the regional constellation to deal with these issues that go beyond its borders. A good example, I will be slow on this in this area. SAB Miller, went to Kenya and then trademarked something which has got that copy, that top most of Kilimanjaro as part of its trademark. Kenya approached South Africa, it was sometimes in 2000, to say, talk to your company, they are having a trademark that incorporates our national heritage, that highest point. There were some discussions which went on, but the advice, it was a political advice. We said, it is better for Kenya and Tanzania to agree on this issue because I'm not so certain where Kilimanjaro starts. It may be starting in Kenya, but the highest point is in Tanzania or vice versa. So the two nations were fighting about that. So our response was to say, it is your geographical indicator, the two of you. You can enter into a bilateral arrangement in sync to it how the highest Kilimanjaro can be used as part and parcel of intellectual property. Please negotiate on this issue. That's how the matter was dealt with. But they understand Tanzania owns everything. Issues raised, the submission that the representation of the National Council should expressly include traditional leaders. We have already considered on this matter. We consulted with Contralesa. We said, no interpretation here, you are included. They said, no, we beg that we should expressly be referred to. We said the bill, it is in Parliament, so we will tell Parliament that we are agreeing that something should be done. The existing traditional structures can be recognized in the bill in order to promote accessibility, effectiveness, and efficiency in the protection of IK. That is to give an example of saying the tribal authorities, the traditional leaders can also play a role in that regard. So I'm finishing, Chair. The submission that traditional leadership should play a role in the identification of communities and the creation of tribes. This has been emphasized by the DDG. The bill is going retro. It does not provide for retrospectivity, which other stakeholders feel is important in this area for historical misappropriation. The bill may facilitate agreements and payment of royalties going forward, which the parties can agree to. At the NEDLAC process, a proposal was agreed upon to propose inclusion of transitional provision that will facilitate this transition. However, the issue of retrospectivity is in the discretion of Parliament, depending on the merits of the matter at hand. establishing that there should be regulation of collecting societies and distribution of royalties. In this area, it is agreed that there were a lot of corruption being alleged against collecting societies because they are not regulated. Only collecting societies dealing with niggle time is regulated. The others are not regulated. And there are allegations, blah, blah, blah. During consultation on the niggle time issues and the like, people said, please, we want them to be regulated. And then it was also agreed at NEDLAC, so the report is before this House. So, in conclusion, therefore, commentators that advocate for sui generis seem not to have considered the policy of IKS of 2004. More than half of presenters support the policy imperatives protecting ISP, IK, and the bill, subject to improvement. But in particular, Contralés, Orania Movement, and the House of Traditional Leaders, we had them. So in that was my way of conclusion to say there is a view that the bill is a starting point to protect IK, and that other means like sui generis should, as per the 2004 IKS policy, be pursued and or coexist with the IP system. It being recognized that IP system focuses on commercialization, whilst other areas could address issues of promotion and preservation process has commenced in South Africa already, the bill will need improvement in the areas identified and creation of framework for supportive mechanism with communal structures like trusts, cooperatives, and the like. So, Chair and Honorable Members, that is the end of my presentation by the DDG. Would like to sum it up. Thanks.
Chair, through you, we will come to the end of our presentation. Like I said, we have not sought to deal with each and every issue, but we have considered all the comments that were made by stakeholders. In the event that members would like us to maybe clarify certain areas which may not have been covered, we'll do that, and the team will assist in answering the questions and dealing with that. But just a final thing that I just want to indicate, Chair, is that the concern that was raised in various consultations was how this bill would impact on existing rights. And I think in that process, I remember that Dalro did come up with a letter that has been written by one of the artists. And I think having discussed all of the responses so far, I think it should be clear that people that have rights that have accrued to them in terms of the Constitution, they will be protected. However, the Constitution also defines measures in terms of issues of rights that may have been wrongly acquired and all of that. There are processes, but this bill here, we are not seeking to deal with that. We are proposing the protection in terms of other things that people might feel strong about. I think it is up to this Parliament to consider how it would like to deal with that. But I think on the proposals that we have on the table, we didn't seek to interfere with the rights that have already accrued that are in existence. I think that constitutional principle exists in our legislation, and the process is defined fully. Again, just in regards to the process that we have also adopted leading to this end today, we have not been in a position to en masse a crowd to come to Parliament to say, please come and support this bill. But I think what we can give comfort to this committee is that we have consulted. From 2007, consulting on this bill, we went for consultations initially, we went for broader consultations, we went for specific consultations, and we even further went into consultation even while we're engaging with stakeholders while we're processing this bill in Parliament. So we have applied our minds to the issues that have been put on the table, and we've also attempted to be very objective about this, because I think our goal is not to mislead Parliament to adopt something that would not work. Our goal is for us to achieve what is in the in the policy and in the objectives that we seek to achieve. And the last thing, again, you know, Chair, is that we believe that this committee so far is well advised. I think through all the other independent advisors, through some of the researches that has been shared with this committee, and we think that obviously the guidance from this committee would be useful to the department at this point. And yeah, we were not able to rent the crowd to come and do that. I think next time when government has more money, we'll be able to bring some crowd to say we support. But I think that's not the table for us. I think we are here to look at the good of what is on the table and what we can achieve with it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ntuli. Now, members, what we're going to do so that we don't find ourselves breaking in the middle, I know that there are going to be a lot of questions. I know that. So what we are going to do, I understand there's an incredibly narrow passage there where the tea is. So my suggestion to you, because you've only got 10 minutes, is to, as soon as you've got it, just move aside. We can't have a hold-up, and we're coming back into this committee room. It is now 11 o'clock. Try and be here at 10 past, meaning you'll sit down. I'm sure we can start at 11:15. So it is now a couple of minutes to 11. Please just take the tea break, and then we'll come back for the engagement. It'll also enable others who were at the Chief Whip's forum to have returned.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mbuzi sanga ndiko ilivanisa na vonechitenje. Vonechitenje vanga wachizi umbora za vudhivudhi angenta good hope. Ndichi raisa, he'll explain what I say. Listen, it's my right and my heritage. I'm proud of my language and my culture as well. Bone exchange and don't want to talk to Fungo Lauri.
Members, we haven't got 20 chairs in here.
Uh-huh.
And we have one person speaking. But if I can just advise you, Honorable Shabalka, what we normally do, because we don't automatically have translators in here, and the secretary didn't arrange, I don't think he was fully aware that we needed a translator. I certainly agree that it is your right, and I think all committees need to appeal to Parliament to make more interpreters and translators available during committee time.
Chairperson, I think Machibase asked the question to someone who understands the language. So I think in his response, he'll try also to make it clear to all of us what the question was. So I think we should leave it to them. Let her continue.
Certainly, he indicated to me he could understand it.
Uh-huh.
But I think, in fairness, we did need someone to translate the question for all members participating, you see, because it's a public meeting. So if there was anyone on the membership side that could do the translation as well, that would be helpful. And if not, given the circumstances, I would have to say that we don't have a translator, but certainly the member from DTI did understand you. He indicated that. Am I correct? Yes, you were nodding your head. Thank you. Continue, please.
Thank you very much. One exchange and that's not all, ma'am. Dava Yangayori. Vazi Umbura Riange in a good of Shandra Mahola. Zari Zichuamana Uburunga, Zitu Zeneru Shakarazi, Ponipa. Dorisa issue Yangoma Rungundu. Eva Venda, Vavachuangayo, Vachikunda Zumu Chakakana Masinavo. Zino, the good party, this is the Gava Gava Wahachivas. Utunga Aichapara Zuri in that. Izo zvito yoburunge yana kana yoburunge yana kuti ndakavonera kuti funa kuri ndive nayo haya ni vosa treasure rushaka risume dzavana na vaduru kemifa la vola rari kipenya ngano vamwe apo vanga pirisa yari vo
No, thanks.
The Honorable Member, Ms. Chivase, is raising an issue of a drum, the vendor drum called Ngoma Rungundu. Ngoma is the drum. Then its name was Ngoma Rungundu to say it has disappeared. It is no longer, nobody knows where it is. That Ngoma Rungundu was used by the vendor kings backwards. When it is beaten, the enemies just falter. They die. Or they go into slumber and the defenders can do whatever about the enemy. So now it is lost. So as the heritage of the defender people, can you assist us, talking to us now, the DTI, can you assist us about locating it in so much that we can show it to our future generation as a heritage. I think that's where, yes, thanks.
Well, I think the Honourable Member is nodding quite satisfied. We will continue with the second question, please, for clarification.
Baie dankie, voorzitter. Ek verstaan nie wat die oproer is nie. Quite clear that no one knows what I'm saying. I will try another language. Merci beaucoup, Madame Presidente. Merci beaucoup, Madame Presidente. May I? Chair, my questions that I want to ask are in the following areas. If the department can answer me on the following issues. The first one is just generally speaking the entire bill. There has been very many different voices, and I'm afraid to say some of us also, who feel that there's quite a number of weaknesses in the bill. Before you can even change any clauses, just the entire approach and just how the bill have been crafted together. If they could respond to that assertion, it would be very helpful. And then also, what do they propose in that regard? The second one, Chair, is I am not authority on this matter, but I saw our other members were responding, and that is the, the slide 12 one. I think we should probably just tread a little bit careful there with absolute certainty, make the assertions that the department is making there, and probably will be best for the committee to dig into themselves about the veracity of the assertion of the department there. Chair, on the legal matters, I think that we although we got the copies before us, I think in the last meeting, the committee should probably satisfy ourselves with the responses that both the state law and Parliament legal is saying in this regard. We can simply say we hear what the department is saying here, but I think that we must satisfy ourselves absolutely in this regard. The other matter that I quickly want to say, Chair, is I'm not quite sure what the department is saying on the NEDLAC one. Are you saying that the committee must see it fit
to make those amendments themselves, or are you acknowledging that at least there were consensus, and therefore those consensus, which many people have said, that there were consensus, and those consensus, you have not turned back on that consensus. I was intrigued on slide 26, what the department has said there, that Parliament is limited in its power and cannot legislate extraterritorial. I would submit, Chair, that we should get an opinion on that. My understanding is it's not the case. I think there are some legislation before this Parliament that might not be in trade and industry that does give the power to Parliament to go beyond. And there are other institutions and structures also. We've got a, what is the Parliament of the African Parliament, IPU? No, not the IPU, what? Yes, that one. And then there's the AU and all of those different structures. So I'm not quite sure then, you know, why they would make that decision. The last one that I want to know, Chair, is I don't get what the department is really proposing. It is extremely unclear what they are saying. And I think it will help us in asking the department, what are you proposing with the bill? What are you saying to this committee you asking us to consider as a way forward with the bill from your side? And having said that, Chair, I think we should still find a way to let the information that we were not able to engage with at the other meeting there in Goodhope Chamber, I want to formally ask that we allow a situation for this committee to engage in whichever manner we want to say with that information that was before us, because that at least gave us an indication, not more or less, I think quite decisively, on what it is that we can consider. And I'm talking to the I apologize, I can't remember your surname, Ismay. Yeah, the PC. Thank you, Chair.
And now the Honourable Coxey.
I'm just a few days in Parliament, so don't be surprised. I don't want to get back to... to saying we can, this indigenous knowledge, we can go retrospectively. I know it may not be possible, but as much as I have said, quite a lot has been lost in the process of advent of democracy. But my main question as a traditional leader, I've been attending workshops for this traditional leadership and governance framework, not 4 weeks ago. I just want to know the authority that traditional leaders have with respect to, like you were giving an example of community enterprises such as trust and cooperatives. Because whenever you say you want to form a trust as a traditional authority, you go through a lot of processes. If you want to amend just one line, you must go through the matter of court and what have you. What is it that traditional leaders have, or is just a way of saying you have got authority? What will this amendment act improve on that? Even cooperatives, you go through a lot of processes. So to me, that act of 2003 Chapter 2 does not solve any problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kotsi.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to agree with the DDG earlier when he said this is a very complex legislation, and I think it will be somehow, there will be some trial and error even in the process of implementation. My I want to raise an issue on bullet 20, is it page 10? In your response, where you say it is envisaged as a trust, national trust which has a legal personality to take the place of where perhaps the author is not identified. My question is then, are we saying then the state is the one that is going to benefit in the form of an author in that case, or perhaps the state is going to try and find some community that should benefit on that, because it is not clear, the author is not found, then in that case, who's going to benefit? The second one is on page 12, where you talk about the indigenous communities perhaps avoiding going through legal route, and that there's going to be some form of mechanism that is put in place. It would be interesting to hear how is this alternative resolution mechanism is going to consist. Will it be in a board form? Will it be in what form are they? Thinking. I do also try to raise the issue which was raised by some of the people who came for public hearings. I would like, because the department today has responded in some of the issues raised by the stakeholders, but they have not indicated which ones that were actually presented that they think that these ones are actually are being considered by the department. I would like a situation where when we get another copy of the bill, that all the areas that they have considered during these inputs, that those ones are highlighted in the bill, so that when we begin to look into the bill again, we can see which areas they have actually considered around, because my understanding for public hearings is that it is not just an exercise just for the sake of doing. It is also, as they were saying, that they have learned a lot. In what they have learned and in what they realize that it's something that should be considered, when they include it, that all those areas in the bill, so that it makes easier for us as a committee to see what they have taken into consideration, what people have actually, so that when we get the next copy, we are able as a committee to see those areas that they have considered on, and perhaps even if they, now, because they didn't bring those to us, because the concern that was raised that not even a single, there were groups, someone was saying not even a single proposal that we brought has been considered. For now, we can't say until they actually are able to show that to us. Thank you, Chair.
Very much. And then we have after that the Honourable Lockreed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would, if I'm correct, if I say that the DDG indicated that these concerns mentioned here are not all of them, but only certain where there were more than one of those concerns. So I would like to ask in that regard then, whether there were no concerns raised about the actual position of the registrar concerning then a very important function there in terms of commercializing exploitation of such property, preservation, promotion, and so forth, because it's not clear from the bill how this is going to really be done, and I have a major concern with whether the actual funds will get back to the communities. Given what is in the bill at the moment. So were there any concerns raised in this regard? And then I also, Chair, have to say that I'm not fully convinced concerning the reply to the expropriation matter. It was just said that we do have a constitution and so forth, but I think it's going to be very difficult for people to go that route every time if they consider that their rights or their property has been expropriated. Especially if one reads in the bill that ownership of any copyrights, if it is a traditional work, shall vest in the fund, which is in the state. So I think there should be much more clarity on the protection of people and their intellectual property and the rights they have there. And then I would also like to support the issue raised by the other honourable member here. I'm also not quite sure at this point exactly what we have here. Is it now, are we going to look at a bill that has certain changes made to it? Because at some points within the presentation it was also mentioned, but in this regard, sui generis would be more advisable. So exactly, are we looking then at the hybrid form, bill plus the possibilities of sui generis, or just one bill? Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Harris.
I think Honourable Smiller was first. Yeah, I'm happy to go.
I was going according to the seating plan rather than the alphabet. Honourable Smart.
Thank you, Chair. When we talk about the time frames or the disclosure of the information to the database, or we do not mention any sort of a time frame in order to disclose possible novelties or trademarks, and I'm trying to understand the constitutionality surrounding that. If we look in trying to encourage innovations in future generations as they come, people from different backgrounds might come from a community, might upskill themselves and later on use their expertise in a specific educational field 30 or 40 years down the line and come up with an idea. And I do not see a time frame for people to register a specific idea, a time frame. By 2020, all possible ideas or conclusions to a product has got to come up. Your possible cases against disputes and the court cases that might come surrounding about that, given it's the right of any individual or community to devise that route. I'm trying to understand that, is state going to intervene to assist communities where they cannot go that route financially, yes or no? And talking about the composition of the of the council, the bearing of the cost of the council, if the department can actually just maybe it's point out to me, you will bear the cost of the expenditure of this council. Where will this come from? Because I'm just trying to see in the bill where does it refer to say that these people will be part of. And I think I'm sure my colleague maybe touched on the issue about the funding or running the National Trust Fund, the actual funding. Will the board or will the council redetermine its priorities and therefore distribute the funding separately or to their performances which they want to go, or would they ring fence that specific fund for that specific community in order to make sure that it goes back to the community? I just needed to understand where the board or this council's authority will lie in managing the funds on behalf of the community. Thank you.
Honourable Albert.
Honorable Harris is just before.
Okay. Oh, all right. Thank you very much. Thank you. My question relates to tackling this issue on a holistic level. You want to protect the system, but the manner in which the system is being protected at the moment, it seems, is on a piecemeal basis. For you have different objectives. You have commercialization, which you're trying to protect. Then you have promotion, preservation, development, education, and so forth. And it seems that the other objectives are trying to be met by the DST. I would, in an ideal world, like to see the DST's draft legislation together with yours to see how they fit together in a holistic manner in protecting the systems that deserve protection and the elements of those systems. And I just want you to answer, because I have a sense that the Department of Trade and Industry and DST are competing with each other in trying to get out the first piece of legislation instead of cooperating, and I want to know what your level of cooperation is at the moment, and whether you do have a holistic approach in this. Secondly, you said cultural copyright trademark designs can be perpetual if they are renewed. That is a bit problematic. The current copyright regime and trademark design regime don't make provision for a permanent existence or a protection in that regard. Can you just elaborate why this would be the case with indigenous knowledge, from a commercial point of view, that is? The dispute resolution system is a good idea. I just would like to know what the composition would be, how you would elect the members, and whether they would conduct their proceedings by way of arbitration. Would there be mediation? Arbitration would be similar to the CCMA and so forth. And if there's an appeal, would it be directly to the High Court? And then collection agency regulation, collection agencies seem to coexist together with the national, I think it's committee, what you call it. How would they work together, and would they be opposing each other? And that's all for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Harris.
Chair, I've said it before. I think that the first decision we need to make is whether to go with an approach that amends the existing IP laws, or whether to come up with a new law, what the law, the submissions called the sui generis approach. And I think first the committee needs to consider sui generis versus what we have on the table, and then if we decide to go with the kind of omnibus approach like the one on the table, then we need to go through some of the other concerns raised. But because the first issue is the sui generis question, I want to look at slide 21 first, where I think there's some obfuscation around the difference between a system and the difference and IP legislation in general. As has been reiterated several times, everybody agrees that we need to protect traditional knowledge some way. It's just about the way to best do that. And just to clarify, despite a rather kind of flexible summary of the presenters who presented in the hearings, in terms of the department's conclusion, actually the vast majority of them were in favor of a sui generis approach. But all that means is, as I understand it, is that we need a new law under the IP system, in the same way that when we developed, we had patents, then we had copyrights, then we developed the Patent Act. And then when trademarks came along, we developed a new Trademarks Act. It's all the IP system, and what those submissions were suggesting is that now we have traditional knowledge, let's have a sui generis act, all under the same system. So on page 21, I'd just like the department to address that concern. And then a simple question, is WIPO producing a draft model law for traditional knowledge, and if so, doesn't it make sense to
wait for them to publish that so that we can make sure we're in line with international best practice. Chair, the Deputy DG said right up front on slide 11 that she could give us some examples of cases where indigenous knowledge does meet novelty or originality requirements, or rather examples that disprove that concern. I would appreciate if we could get some of those examples. Then she also lists on slide 11 that one of the concerns is the difficulty in identifying individual creators and investors, but my understanding of it is actually it's more about identifying individual communities as opposed to individuals. And then on the next slide, the Deputy DG spoke about how there might be borderline cases, but obviously when we're writing law, we need to make sure that we write law for all cases. We can't write law for the majority of cases and then deal with borderline cases as they arise. We need to make the law comprehensive enough that all cases are covered as far as possible. Then on slide 14, the expropriation issue, I agree with my colleague who I think there wasn't much evidence for why this isn't expropriation, because the National Trust Fund, I mean, by definition, is taking the ownership of this indigenous knowledge, and it's the trust fund is a state-run body. So I think there's still a risk around the constitutional challenge there. Then, Chair, just if I may, go through a few other items that I don't think were covered properly by the presentation. The first one is the department acknowledged that the definitions were problematic. I think one of the submissions to us spoke about a common ethological origin. So the idea that you're trying to find a social boundary. Does the department believe that if we amended the definition of a traditional community to include a social boundary, that would be sufficient? Secondly, I'm confused about how the NEDLAC agreement has seemed to have stalled. Can the department comment on how we implementing what NEDLAC agreed? Because it doesn't seem to have been implemented by anyone. And it's certainly not the committee's responsibility. The whole issue of dispersing the funds in a prescribed manner, it's all over the bill, but it's the one example is in clause 16 in 40D. The prescribed manner is never clarified. How can we have law that does something in a manner which we don't prescribe? Some of the submissions came and discussed the idea that we would need another sui generis bill for geographical indicators. The department touched on that, but do they believe that is that not something we should just be doing straight up front instead of trying to incorporate it in this bill? And then the last two questions, Chair. They are the last two, Chair. Is the department aware or have they had sight of the regulatory impact assessment that was done? And if so, is it something that's going to form part of what this committee gets to consider? Because there are some of us who have had sight of that, and it has some very clear and strong views on the bill in its current form. And then lastly, just to reiterate my colleague Connie's concern about the status of Ms. Duplessis today. She presented last time a draft bill, which I understood came from the Standing Advisory Committee, and now she's here in her capacity on that committee. Does that mean the draft bill that she gave us last time is something that the department is putting forward, or how do we regard what was distributed last time? Thank you.
Indeed, I'm sure the DDG will respond to statements at this point, but I haven't forgotten. I haven't forgotten that. But I just want to indicate that she'll have that opportunity when she responds. But we still do have one other name here, and that is the whip of DTR of the Portfolio Committee, the Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'll say that I appreciate the input which is coming from the department. In particular, when you take it that they have taken into consideration the presentations which were made by the various stakeholders. But what is critical here is the issue of who is the most important stakeholder on this issue? Why do I say that? Because I know that the issue of NADLAC is being referred to now and again. But here we're having a portfolio committee of parliament which represents everyone. But when you take the decisions of NADLAC, NADLAC itself does not represent everyone. Can unless I'm misinformed, I don't know whether there's any traditional healer who's in NADLAC. Is there any traditional leader who is in NADLAC? So the issue then which will come out of that is, how can other people take decisions on behalf of the other people? Because when it comes to the issue of the indigenous knowledge, I think that the critical people who are very important are the traditional leaders and the traditional healers who are the custodians of this knowledge. So in borrowing the labor from the disabled people of South Africa, they once said that nothing about us without us. So what I want to say here is that the issue of NADLAC cannot take precedence because it represents a vested interest. That's why the DCG was correct when she said that you look at the people who came to present here. Sometimes you could have guessed that they came from the same lecture room and then they were lectured over the month a year. But what the people who are critical here are the people who are affected. That's why I take the presentation of Contralesa, the presentation of Orania, as very critical presentations because they represent the people on the ground. So the question which I'd like to ask is, in taking this forward, how is the department going to ensure that those constituencies are taken on board everywhere? Because they don't have the muscle, financial muscle to come here now and again. They don't have the financial muscle to go and lobby in major newspapers or to go to court. But as parliament, how are you going to take their views, ensure that their views are being incorporated as we move forward? Because I think that that's the most critical stakeholder. And then when you go to the issue of the constitutional challenge, that issue was raised, the issue of expropriation. The Contralesa, the House of Traditional Leaders, they were asked a direct question. Do you support this bill? The answer was yes, we do support this bill. So if there's people who are directly affected by that, they appreciate that. So who's this patriarchal society which is going to take decisions on their behalf? So I think that let us respect that aspect. So that's why I say that the issue of these people, their views must be taken very seriously. The people must ensure that it is catered for. The other issue which does not come out clear here is the issue of this 50-year period, whereby this is going to be. Those stakeholders, they said, no. They existed before even 1652. They were there, there were certain processes, there were certain things which they were doing before 1652. So how does this bill go to ensure that that thing is incorporated? Because I think there's a major stakeholder which must be considered. And then in rolling out the bill, you can see that we like it or not, the bill cannot be adopted as it is. So it means that there must be some sort of changes which must be done. And the parliament is rising next week. So the issue which I'm asking the department, what are your time frames to address these issues which were raised by this, as a whip of the committee, so that when you go to programming, we know what we're programming. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I will keep my own remarks to a minimum because I wish to make extensive remarks on Friday. But the whip has already covered us in certain aspects, and so has the Honourable September, who led the multi-party task team in this regard. But I must say, it was very welcome that you were at least considering the idea of the dispute, the mechanism and so on, and perhaps a few other issues that you put forward here. But a general comment I would like to make is that there was reference throughout the presentation about certain examples. There are countries, there are this, and we are not aware of this, you see. Now, it may be that there is a list somewhere, but it would be useful to us if we could get this information very clearly in a response, either in writing
or whatever. The one thing which I didn't hear raised, and I know you have commented on this before, but I want to get a total clarity. If there's something in our constitution that prevents something being retrospective. Because you see, I find that strange if I think of land. I don't think we're only looking at land from 1994, as my own understanding. Therefore, you're looking back further than 1994. So I'd like to know, with making it retrospective, what is unconstitutional about it? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks, honourable members, for the questions. We'll obviously try our best to respond to them. And where we are not adequate, we will request permission to just send some in writing, perhaps in the next day. So, I'm going to just allow the team to deal with the issues. But before maybe I do that, because I think Esme would also assist in responding to the questions, I think it's important for us to just clarify the role. When we presented in this committee, we did introduce the Standing Advisory Committee. And we recall, members, that in the briefing sessions, the first briefing that we had with this committee, we had as part of our team Mr. Zafter, and we did indicate that he is a member of the Standing Advisory Committee, which is established in terms of the IP legislation to advise the minister on an ongoing basis. This is a committee that is created to give an independent advice out of the department to, you know, and it is comprised of experts from various areas in the field of IP. So this is the capacity that we come with them here. We have a similar committee for the Companies Act, and we also involve them in our processes so that they can give us advice on a continuous basis. So what we have done in terms of the Standing Advisory Committee for IP is that we've requested them, ever since we started with this process, to allocate members that will then be a closer link for us to get the immediate advice. The members that are allocated can then just consult the broader members because they don't meet regularly. They meet, I think, four times in a year. And where there's an urgent issue, they can have special meetings and all of that. But to facilitate the advice for the minister, we always ask them to allocate some members to work as part of the team of the department, and the similar approach we take in regard to the other committee. I think on the issue about the status of the presentation that was made on that day, I think that as a department would not necessarily wish to comment on that. But I think in terms of how the committee will take that presentation, whether they would wish to entertain it or they may entertain it later, I think it will be the discretion of this committee, you know, given its own rules and regulations. But the only thing that we need to say is that in terms of the content of the information that they had presented, we are aware of it because it has been shared with the department. And it has been shared with ourselves as the team that was working on this. But we cannot prescribe to the committee in terms of how they should look into that. But we can only say that on a continuous basis, they are part and parcel of this team because we also rely on their expertise on these areas, and that's the reason why the Standing Advisory Committee has been created. Chair, I'm not going to, you know, try to be more elaborate on this, but I hope that this just suffices in terms of just, you know, explaining the status of her as a team member. But we have brought a team member of the SACIP before and through all the briefings when we started in this process.
Just on one thing there, we just like to clarify one item. During the time that they were here, when it was not clear, and was not clear with yourself just at that time, we did receive what I would call a draft, fresh piece of legislation from them. Now, I understand then that's come from the minister. It's what I'm trying to just clarify, because having said that, it is only this committee, once it's in Parliament, that can actually present a new bill. So perhaps you should not respond at this moment. I need to make that clear. Secondly, we do want your concept of where you had it envisaged to finish and so on, but yes, we will decide on the process. We will take it forward ourselves. Thank you. But I think let's get to perhaps the substantive issues here. The members attending the memorial service, as I said, we certainly are targeting 1:25 to 1, and we will then consider Tuesday afternoon to complete the work that was scheduled for today. So over to the DDG.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just hand over to the team quickly to respond to the various questions that have been posed.
No, thanks, Chairperson, honorable members, members of my team. I will try to pick and choose, but my other colleagues will also make some follow-up. So I will pick the most easiest one, so they will have the discussion of answering. I'm starting with the issue of the NEDLAC report from Honorable Member Khadev. Since it is said that that report should not take precedence over other stakeholders, I think it's granted that the NEDLAC process is a statutory requirement. Government coming with any legislation which has got a socio-economic impact, it has to be tabled there. But the final decision of adopting whatever is contained in that report, even if we agree behind the scenes, it lies here. It lies here. So that's how I can talk to that. I hope I was short enough, but the part stops here. So the other issue on the issue of saying as prescribed is not clear in the act. Generally, these are empowering sections. In other words, when we come, we will see a legislation here. We want an enabling section, empowering section, without details. The details should go to the regulation. Regulation stops with the minister, they may come to cabinet or parliament, but it's a ministerial competency. So generally where you see as prescribed, it's a matter of the minister to come with that procedure, generally. So that's how we can respond to that. And then the other issue of retrospectivity, I will come back to it. The geographical indicators. Why can't we have geographical indicators as stand alone? That's how I had Honorable Harris' question. Our response is to say yes, it is a matter of a national choice. Last week during public hearings, a presentation was done to say in this country, it's a standalone, in another, it's a chapter within the intellectual property. So here in South Africa, we have already said collective marks, certification marks, are part and parcel of the current IP system. Do we want to disturb something which is working? Our submission is that no, we should not divert and go to a separate legislation, whereas the current legislation or system is working. That is how we can respond to the. And then another area, WIPO is developing a model law. Why can't we wait for WIPO to finish that? Yeah, I think that I'm just summarizing it. Our understanding is that less needs to go on at national level. Because we have the general IT system internationally. And so much that, therefore, it may take 10, 20 years to formulate a treaty. Treaty formulation is another issue. It may take long time. While things are going wrong at national level, whereas Parliament has got competency to do a stopgap measure, something of that sort, to come with some temporary solution. Even if there is a treaty there, it may have something which does not incorporate our interest. You may choose not to ratify, to be a member of that treaty. So therefore, we are saying, we are submitting a bill which wants to address things which can be addressed in the current form. If something comes at an international level, it is the prerogative of this Parliament to ratify that treaty. Since ratification or accession to treaty is a parliamentary issue, it's not a ministerial unless if it is of a technical nature. So therefore, we will come back if there is such a treaty, which we think it is in the national interest of South Africa. That's how we can respond. And then the other issue, designation on special boundaries, NEDLAC prescribed manner and the like. I think the issue of NEDLAC, we have responded on it. The issue of if we include social boundaries and that, will we be happy? Yeah, these are the issues of improvement to the bill. It is true that the way forward, the DDG maybe will talk to it. And then this committee to say what is the way forward. But the issue of the definition, we are agreeing in principle that it needs an improvement. And then it is difficult, therefore, to come with theoretical issues, as maybe Honorable Member Ezit Kotsi, to say it is difficult to hear these debates going on without seeing an improved version of the bill. But maybe I will need guidance to say when should we come with that, because Honorable Khadele said, are you intending to come with a deal, improved version, by when? And then maybe I can preempt that to say by next week we are in a position to come with that. So the definition issue probably will be tempered issue. This Parliament should take a position to say this is acceptable to us, or it's not acceptable to it in this way. So everything, whether it's a NEDLAC report, whether it's what the department is proposing, this Parliament will have to pronounce to say we want 1, 2, 3. That is how I can respond to some of the issues.
Yes, you won't be coming with an improved version of the bill, because you won't be bringing another bill back unless we reject this one. But what we will say is clearly there are areas that are questions we have asked to which you are going to respond. And then when we get that back, we're going to look at this alongside a lot of other responses, you see. And but unless we reject this bill, you won't be coming with another bill. Or the minister just withdraws it for some odd reason. So I'm just saying, you will come in writing if necessary, as the DDG has just indicated, to respond to this, so we can take it further, which is what we're looking for here. No, we're not looking for new bills at this stage, because we haven't rejected this one.
No, thanks. Pardon my English, I was just saying we receive a lot of input during public hearings, on our own, whatever. Therefore, there is a need to talk to this bill and say, if people say, where is this clause on dispute resolution and the like, where is it here? We will try to come with a That is the thing. Pardon me if I introduce something else.
may I that so that my colleagues can deal with others that I may come back. I was just responding to the chairperson, so I was a little bit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The one response is to the Honorable Marshal Obana, who mentioned the issue of what is the policy of traditional leaders in terms of
and as some of the arts and culture people are leaving for some other meeting, and they've been here a long time, and I apologize. The Honorable Shavasa, who, you know, you have that lingual relationship. So if you could just respond, please.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. May I respond in our linguistic? no problem. So the question, as I hope I summarized it well, she was nodding. So what we're saying is that this bill deals with intellectual property, as described, in so much that, therefore, the issue of, what is it, of that Ngoma Lungundu, where is it, and the like, we may not necessarily be the relevant department to respond to it. However, as the government, I'm not an expert in that area. The government has got power to go around museums of other countries and claim and say we want that issue is a South African heritage, let it come back. They may demand like the issue of our grandmother Sarki Bartman, whatever, they may demand to say we want those things to come back. But there is a department which is an expert in that area, whether it's art and culture, and I'm not so sure. So the location of that can be retrieved by that government exercising a particular legislation in the competency of another department. But in passing, if it is found and somebody wants now to trademark it, as an example, or to take a portion of that Ngoma Lungundu, and then make a portion of a trademark. Therefore, that person needs to go to the vendor, as an example, and ask permission to use a portion of it together with the application in the trademark area. That's as far as I can respond. There.
We'll proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In response to the Honorable Marshal Obana, concerning the issue of the authority of traditional leaders, the bill proposes the establishment of communal structures within the areas to deal with the issue of either getting a purposeful vehicle to deal with the issue of royalties, the collection of data, and the rights of indigenous knowledge holders. And one is that vehicles such as trust, as you rightfully said, as well as cooperatives, companies, CCs, can be established in terms of that. The role of traditional leaders could be one of either being a trustee of the particular vehicle that he set up, and therefore assimilate and propose certain measures in dealing with collection as well as payments of royalties within the community. The other could be in terms of setting up boards to deal with the issue of payments out of royalties as well as the similar measure of collection. But the structures are there to deal with communal aspects and the way the traditional leadership adds to the communal aspect of protecting the rights of the community as well as indigenous knowledge within those particular rights accordingly in terms of that. In terms of the issue of expropriation, it must be stated that the expropriation measure of unknown entities dealing with IK is that the state will hold them in trust as well. It's not a full expropriation as such, as we currently have expropriation measures in law. The example could be if, for example, a company goes under or gets dissolved and there's property within that company and nobody claims the right of that particular property. It then gets bona vacantia and it gets submitted to the state. The state holds that property in trust until a lawful owner comes forward and claims those particular rights in terms of that. A similar mechanism will work here, whereby the state will hold them in trust accordingly pending any sort of lodgement in the application for rights being claimed on the IK. It's not a expropriation in full in terms of the state making use of those particular IK knowledge to its benefit accordingly in terms of that. And other mechanisms. If you're looking at the issue of alternate dispute resolution and how the mechanism is going to work, it's going to be along the very similar line that we have currently in terms of tribunals, consent orders, as well as looking at the whole review mechanism, inherent jurisdiction of the courts. Currently, if you look at other laws which have an impact on the Act, we have the Companies Act, and you'll be au fait with that, is that it also proposes something called a Companies Tribunal, which deals with alternative dispute resolution mechanisms within companies. This similarly will have a similar type of arbitration and mediation type of function in dealing with it accordingly, and therefore will have the whole issue of representation and also state assistance. Because if you look at the way that mechanism will work, and I'm trying to equate them two because it's going to fall under a similar area, because what is proposed in that law has an impact on this one in terms of the creation of something called the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, which therefore has also a right in the Companies Tribunal in terms of that. There is a mechanism to deal with the issue of assistance to communities, because there was another question which asked about what assistance will be given. Those particular laws have also drafted measures in dealing with the issue of costing as well as legalities around assisting those communities in taking their matters forward by virtue of the fact of alternate dispute resolution and the issues of cost as well as timing in dealing with their rights accordingly. One other issue that was asked, I think, by Honourable Alberts was the cost of the council. It is stated in the draft that the minister will have to consult with the Minister of Finance to deal with the whole remuneration aspect of how the council is going to run, as well as how it's going to be funded accordingly in terms of that model. But it'll probably be a dual funding, which is probably be funding by the state, as well as funding by way of maybe applications made in terms of that.
Honourable Chair, I'm acutely aware of our time constraints, and I would really... Is this better? Can you hear me now? Okay, I'm Esme Duplessis. My status has been questioned, but I'm a member of the advisory committee, and the committee advises the minister on issues that the minister refers to the committee, such as this particular one. I would very much like to try and respond to all of the issues that have been raised. It will probably take longer than 10 minutes, so I am a little bit nervous. But let us try and deal with the issues as they were raised one after the other. To begin with, the issue of the Royal Vendor drum was mentioned. I think what we have to understand as a legal community, and with you as a committee, has to understand is that traditional knowledge or indigenous knowledge has manifestations which will fit into intellectual property statutes, but also has manifestations which will not fit into the IP systems. Everything which is of a traditional cultural value, such as burial sites, circumcision rites, induction rites, and things like that, will require sui generis legislation, will not be capable of fitting into the intellectual property system. Now, when we look at this royal drum, this specific physical item is not intellectual property as such. But what could be protected, and which I would very strongly suggest should be protected, two things. Under the Copyright Act, the three-dimensional shape of this item, so that other people cannot copy without authority that particular shape. Also, as a design, this three-dimensional shape can be protected. So that particular item, which is lost, cannot be retrieved through the IP system. But its unauthorized replication can be prevented. And that certainly has been done in other countries. Certainly in a country like
Ghana, the dramology is a very important discipline in their intellectual property approach, so that the dimensions, the relative shapes, which gives rise to the sound that comes out of this implement, can in fact be protected by way of design registration or by way of copyright. And that is the one thing that this bill could do to assist indigenous communities with their cultural values. It's very difficult. I am not a politician and I'm not a member of parliament, so I don't always understand when and how a bill will be taken forward. What I want to say to this committee is that the concept of an intellectual property amendment bill, as contained in the current bill before this committee, which endeavours to amend the Copyright Act, the Trademarks Act, the Designs Act, and the Performance Protection Act, that bill can be rendered into a form which will deal with all of the issues that have been raised, not only in the public hearings, not only today, but also in the course of the consultations, very specifically also the NEDLAC concerns. For example, if NEDLAC said that the composition of the National Council for Indigenous Knowledge should be revised, that can be done. And one can think of a revision which gives effect exactly to what NEDLAC had in mind by making sure that the minister in appointing this council will consult with the other ministers of state, for example, ministers of agriculture, of arts and culture, of cooperative governance, of environmental affairs, and so forth, and also with other non-governmental organizations such as the traditional healers. And in composing this national council, there can be specific provisions for a representative of the Council of Traditional Leaders, a representative of the traditional healers, and so forth and so forth. So by constituting this council in an appropriate manner, and it's merely rewording what is in the bill, this council can become representative of all stakeholders, indigenous groupings, whether it's Orania or whatever, to take responsibility for the further implementation of the principles of the Act, because that is what the council will do. The council will be consulted by the Registrar of Trademarks. If a trademark application comes before the Registrar and it appears to be a traditional term or expression, council will be there to advise the Registrar, yes, register, or no, do not, and so forth. And that applies to the other intellectual property statutes too. So what I'm trying to say, and I'm sorry that the Honourable Member September isn't here, that there is a possibility of rewording, amending, updating, reformatting, whatever this committee wishes to call it, the existing bill to give effect to all of the problems that have been pointed out, to remove the defects. Okay, extraterritoriality. I think the problem with extraterritoriality is this, that internationally, intellectual property laws are territorial laws. There is no such thing as a world patent. There is no such thing as a world trademark or world copyright. There are certain regional registrations, such as in the European Union, but that is by way of multilateral cooperation, collaboration, and agreement. So we can come up, if we want to, with a SADC regional registration. OAP is a regional registration, but usually intellectual property laws are national laws, territorially restricted. So if you want to move across the borders, it has to be by way of bilateral or multilateral within a region negotiations. And for that reason, by enacting this particular proposed IP amendment bill, Parliament cannot move extraterritorially. That would not be correct. it would really present a problem, also with international instruments, but that could follow by way of bi- or multilateral negotiations. How the road forward will develop with the bill, I'm not sure. It will be for the members of the Department of Industry to put to this committee. But certainly it is possible to look at the bill, which is on the table now, to use the principle by amending the four statutes, by rearranging the sections to be presented in a more accessible, homogeneous manner to come up with a workable, doable solution. Yes, just stop me, Madam Chair. Retrospectivity. Do I want to if you will give me leave then to go to the cinema or something, yes. But no, I cannot, but I'll try. But certainly, when it comes to the queries which have been raised around the authority of the National Trust and the National Council to take the intellectual property which belongs to Indigenous communities, and that would amount to expropriation, that is not what is envisaged by the bill. It should be more clearly formulated that the best thing, and that is what my colleague here said, the best thing of ownership in the National Trust will be the situation of last resort. If you cannot identify the true creator, if you cannot identify the community which owns that, if you cannot identify a person or a body representing that community, then the fallback position will be the National Trust. So there is no intention and no reality of expropriation as it is normally interpreted. And certainly in the bill, there will be a clear indication that whatever funds will come to the National Trust will be applied to the benefit of the community concerned or Indigenous communities if it is a general fund. But again, as my colleague over there pointed out, the specifics will have to be set out in regulations. And the bill can make specific provision for the minister to make regulations where this is regarded as necessary, and it will be, for example, in the allocation of funds. The time frames for disclosure on a database. I think this committee must take into account that the database will not give rise to rights. The database is a recording system. It is a way of placing on record the wealth of Indigenous knowledge within the country, mainly to prevent unauthorized persons from outside the country to make use of the Indigenous knowledge in furthering their own development work. And I have many examples of exactly that happening. It happened by the people who made a submission, the biosafety group, at the public hearings, where local information on this pelargonium was taken up by an outside company without the authority. So the intention will be with a database to create a record where information can be recorded so that it can easily be shown later on that this belongs to this Indigenous community. The time frames, I don't think, will be important. At any time, a person can come and say, you know, we have now discovered that this Indigenous community, in fact, has this wonderful song. We want to record it on the database. That will not give rise to the right. The right will come via the Copyright Act, and the Copyright Act will then provide the enforceable right. The database will be used to record, preserve, and mainly prevent unauthorized people from claiming the ownership of the Indigenous knowledge. And also, I think we should remember that this amendment bill does not seek to amend the Patents Act. Now, the Patents Act is the one thing where novelty is paramount. We're not touching the Patents Act at this point in time. So novelty issues relevant in regard to design, but not in regard to the inventive concept, which forms the basis of a patent. I think we should just bear that in mind. Disputes. The NEDLAC consultation process came up with a recommendation that there should be an alternative dispute resolution mechanism, and it is a matter of inserting an appropriate provision in the bill to provide for a dispute resolution procedure which is more cost-effective, and where a dispute resolution panel to be appointed by the minister in consultation with other ministers of other departments to resolve these issues. So that was what NEDLAC proposed, to be a more cost-effective way of resolving disputes. And yes, if a person is unhappy with the outcome of the dispute resolution procedure, the next step will be to go to court. The question of the holistic approach. I think that one has to bear in mind that it would be ideal, perhaps, to have one comprehensive piece of legislation covering indigenous knowledge holistically. But whether that would be possible in a single piece of sui generis legislation, I do not think. I think the holism coming from this bill should be found in the fact that indigenous knowledge is drawn into the international holistic system for the recognition and protection of intellectual property. What comes out of the human mind is intellectual property. Indigenous knowledge is no different. If a human thinks out a new tune, or makes a new stone carving, or a new piece of basket weavery, or it's intellectual property. It comes out of the human mind, and that is the holism that I think should be seen in this bill. But I acknowledge that indigenous knowledge has other things which is not intellectual property. The burial sites. There was a news item about the sacred forest up in near Toyandu, where people are now burying things. That is something which must be protected in a different law.
Make an arrangement, because it's very important that we try and complete this. Very important. But I also have to take cognizance that you have, the DDG also has certain programs. So if you could just turn off that little mic there. Right. Now, what we need to look at, we do as Parliament have a requirement for this important memorial service. They are all very important. And we, you know, it'll take us 5 minutes to wind up. I'm sure you realize that. And I need to just carry out some housekeeping in view of the fact that we have not completed our program for today. So I would like to ask you, DDG, before I speak to the committee, we had scheduled the part of our interaction on this piece of legislation for Friday as well. And you may also want by then to put a few things in writing and to come back with one or two. But I know the cost, you know, the DGI just told us yesterday that they're trying to cut down on the cost of travel. But on the other hand, there are other exigencies that have come about. So we were always going to have that process forward, as you see on Friday. So we certainly need another commitment, and that's BURN, the Budget Review Recommendations Report. And that's got an absolute deadline, as I think we all know there. So can we make a recommendation? And that is this. If the House had allowed us, unfortunately, it's the ETC where this cluster, we are part of that, needs to be there this afternoon. So that's also not a possibility. So if it was possible for us to look at Thursday, making this very clear, parties don't really want us allow us to use caucus time, as you probably know. So I thought of Thursday, because we need to do that before we take a certain position. And the earliest we can do this, I'm looking at the whip who has a pink sheet in front of him there, may well be at 4 o'clock. I'm saying this because I can't recall Thursday's agenda or program. And I understand, you see, we're not allowed to take caucus time away from parties. Yeah. Is it, what's happening Thursday? Yeah, would that be all right? In terms of the PINK program. All right. So it's possible for us to consider that so that we take our process forward on Friday, which may not, which would only require one of you, as it were, as we go forward, or your parliamentary liaison person. But so we do want your input. So it should be no reflection on any individual from DGI. I think the DDG knows this very well. I now need to just inform the committee about other areas and issues, but I see a hand up in connection with that statement, the earlier one.
Thank you, Chair. You're suggesting you have a meeting at 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Is the ETC cluster, and I do see you happen to be asking a question yourself, so I'm sure you'd like to be there. So it puts us all in difficulties this afternoon, and the House is sitting, though I'm told, until 1600.
Tomorrow.
And today?
I don't know,
just tomorrow is 1600. Tomorrow is 1600, and today, coming with? Today it's sitting until? You see, it really begins to make life difficult because political parties have other programs after 5 unless we give them at least a day's notice and not the same day, you see. So there is that rule. We can't just schedule something today later unless it's a piece of legislation we're in the process of adopting. And there is a glitch, and you know, we have to actually just get something typed out. So I hope, I myself had rather hoped for an early Thursday for a number of other reasons, but I'm putting it to you as a committee. I can't, I don't have any reason that I would persuade the Speaker to allow us to sit today. That is the problem, you see, later than that. But Thursday we can sit at 1600, 4 o'clock, to deal with this, so that there is a proper debate. You can't get the take a decision on Friday unless you've had the response from the department and you've exhausted your questions and clarifications to them. I'm certainly in no position as I sit here to go forward. So I really think, Honourable Harris, we have to move in this instance with my position there. So my only question was to the department. I don't need them on a plane to Europe or India. So are you going to be here? That's the question. Yes, fine. Right.
So we will be available.
Yes, thank you, thank you. And then, of course, on Friday, we then have the schedule as it stands there, am I correct? The committee secretary has asked me to bring back part of Tuesday because we have to absolutely close off with certain things. And I don't want to hold you back on your questions that are, I can see, arising all the time. So he will bring us back something. He is suggesting Tuesday the 16th at 4 o'clock. But it depends on how far we would have gone on Friday. So if we're able to proceed effectively, that won't be a problem. But there are many, many issues that I have to raise in respect of IP. I think you are not exhausted on my left members. So let us move in this respect. We are adjourning on this particular item. We have not dealt with items such as the budget review recommendations, as you see, and we certainly haven't dealt with the WTO. We're just closing that off. So I'd like to regrettably release you at 25-1. Thank you. Sarah, why don't you join me here for a minute? Oh, gosh, sorry, damn it.
Yes, 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 yes Thank you very much. It's the last time. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.